So what role, if any, should our courts play in counterterrorism? Hi, this is Phil Gursky, President and CEO of Borealis Threat and Risk Consulting in Russell, Ontario, Canada. You're listening to Quick Hits, short podcasts about national security and public safety. You probably remember a very interesting court case that dates back almost three decades. In 1994, it was the so-called McDonald's restaurant coffee case, where a woman, a 79-year-old woman named Stella Liebeck, suffered three third-degree burns in her pelvic region when she accidentally spilled coffee in her lap after purchasing it from a McDonald's restaurant. This case went to court. She was badly burned by the coffee, and the court found in her favor, and they granted her a shit ton of money. $160,000 in compensatory damages, as well as $2.7 million in punitive damages. The defense, or rather the prosecution, pointed out that the McDonald's coffee was way too hot, was served at pretty well just under boiling point, 88 degrees Celsius, and that the coffee was, as a consequence, defective, and therefore likely to cause injury more so than coffee served at any other establishment. On the other side of the register, people saw this as a frivolous lawsuit. Why would someone get $2.7 million from McDonald's for spilling coffee in their lap? Now look, I don't drink coffee. I drink tea. But even I know that if I go through with Timmy's, for my non-Canadian listeners, that refers to Tim Hortons, which is the ubiquitous donut and coffee shop around Canada. I think there's a federal law that mandates there must be one Tim Hortons per street corner in Canada. And I know that when I get my Earl Grey tea black, that I shouldn't drink it for a good 20 minutes because the water is 6 bazillion degrees centigrade, i.e. hotter than the surface of the sun. And so there are those that said that Ms. Liebeck should have known better to drink hot coffee, and it probably startled her, and she spilled it on her lap and got third-degree burns. Anywho, the story is a little more complicated than that, but you kind of see my point, that there certainly are cases in our judicial system in the West that people would say, are you really suing over that? Now, this is a podcast about public safety and about national security, and there's some fascinating cases that just came out in the past couple of days. One is a court case that's been decided. The other is still being adjudicated. And they both have to do with terrorism. In one case, a U.S. judge has ruled that the victims of 9/11, those incredibly enormous attacks back in 2001 in New York and Washington, are not, and I stress, not entitled to seize $3.5 billion in assets belonging to Afghanistan's central bank. And the judge ruled, first of all, we've got a problem because the United States does not recognize the Taliban as the government of Afghanistan. But more importantly, he said the Taliban, not the former Islamic Republic of Afghanistan or the Afghan people, must pay for the Taliban's liability in the 9/11 attacks. Now, there's no question the Taliban certainly allowed al-Qaeda to exist, to train, and by extension to plan 9/11 attacks. But this judge said you can't sue the Afghan central bank, which had no role in this matter. Not surprisingly, a lawyer who argued for the victims' compensation said this decision deprives over 10,000 members of the 9/11 community of their right to collect compensation from the Taliban. We believe it is wrongly decided, and we will appeal. So, mark this space. We'll see what happens. The other case that is kind of analogous is one, again, in the United States, where there are people, relatives of a woman called Noemi Gonzalez, who was a California State University student who died in the November 2015 attacks in Paris, carried out by ISIS terrorists. And they're suing Google. And they claim that because Google allowed Islamic State to spread its message and attract new recruits on its platform, they were in violation of the Anti-Terrorism Act. And they're suing them for a gazillion dollars or whatever it is to try to punish Google. Again, the court case has not been decided. The arguments are being heard. What do I make of all this? Well, I kind of agree with the judge in the Taliban case, is that, as I mentioned, the Afghan Central Bank was not responsible for 9/11. So the victims, the families of the victims of 9/11, do not have a strong case to make in the sense of going after this bank to compensate them for the loss of their families. Again, I'm not dismissing the pain and suffering that the families have suffered, but the Afghan Central Bank is not the one responsible, ergo you shouldn't get the money. The one with Google is a little more interesting, and we all know that Google and Twitter and Facebook or Meta, whatever the hell it's calling itself these days, claim to be taking more action to prevent groups like Islamic State and Al-Qaeda and neo-Nazis and all these other wankers out there from using their platforms to spread their messaging, recruit people, and basically be a bunch of a-holes online. But should they be sued and should they be found accountable for a terrorist act in Paris? My answer is no. Those responsible for the attacks were the terrorists themselves, most of whom are dead. There are a few trials going on in Belgium and France still, almost 7.5 years later, to find these people guilty of committing acts of terrorism. And that's what the court should be used for. Courts don't identify. Law enforcement and our security intelligence identifies terrorists, investigates them. Where there's enough information, you can arrest them, you can lay charges and go to court. That's what courts are for. Hopefully to find terrorists guilty before they act, rather as in the case of Paris, after they act. But can you really blame social media platforms? I mean, how do you draw a connection between something that's put on Google and the attacks on the Bataclan Theater and the Stade de France in November of 2015? Is it truly causation? Probably not. Is it correlation? I don't know. But it strikes me as this is yet another frivolous lawsuit. Again, not trying to make light of the suffering that people have gone through because of their loss of family members thanks to the ISIS-inspired terrorists of 2015. On the other hand, there's another case I need to comment on, and this is in Ottawa, where an ISIS recruiter named Ousso Peshtari has agreed to plead guilty to all charges, basically that he recruited on behalf of Islamic State. And he was actually pretty well responsible for the travel to Iraq and or Syria by a couple of Canadians, one of whom is named John McGuire, lived not too far from where I live now in Russell, and he died a couple of years ago. And there's a few others who were, in fact, picked up, charged, tried, and convicted. Now, this was an interesting case because it's been in the courts for a gazillion years. Well, not a gazillion years, but at least 8 years. And one of the problems was that the defense found out that the RCMP agent who provided an awful lot of intelligence that led to the charges being laid used to be a CSIS source. So a source from the Canadian Security Intelligence Service. And the defense wanted all CSIS records with respect to this source to determine its reliability. And normally in Canada, when that happens, the Crown, i.e. the prosecution, says, no, you can't have access to CSIS information because it's not evidentiary in nature. It's intelligence. And if the judge were to rule that CSIS must disclose, the Crown would probably drop the case for fear of exposing sources and methods. So it's interesting that Peshtari's lawyer has agreed, or the client has agreed, to plead guilty. I'm guessing because he's been on trial for 8 years now, and normally it's a 2-for-1. So depending on what his sentence is, and we're about to find out tomorrow, on February 23rd, what his sentence is, he may in fact walk free, having done the equivalent of 16 years in prison pending trial. Whole other question is why the trial took 16 years. That's a whole other podcast. The bottom line is that we can't adjudicate terrorism, except in those cases where, as I mentioned before, we can identify people and try them for conspiracy to commit terrorism, hopefully before they actually do it, as opposed to waiting until after the case. And that's the purpose of the courts. But, you know, using the courts to sue Google or sue the Afghan Central Bank strikes me as a very frivolous use of our courts' time, which makes these cases so long to adjudicate because there really is no valid reason to do so. Let's leave the courts do what they do well, and let's leave other aspects of our counterterrorism structure to do what they do well. Anyhow, that's what I think. Curious what your opinion is on the use of courts and counterterrorism and the three cases I cited specifically. Love to hear your feedback. You can reach me on email, borealisrisk@gmail.com, or on Twitter @BorealisSaves. You'll also find me on LinkedIn and on Facebook. If you like the content and want to get more of it, go to the website, borealisthreatandrisk.com, hit the subscribe button. You get free access to all the blogs and podcasts. There's no admission charge. I don't impose a fee for my stuff. Also remind you, my newest book, The Peaceable Kingdom, A History of Terrorism in Canada, from Confederation to the Present, is now available thanks to Double Dagger Books in Toronto. You can find it on Amazon.ca. Love to hear your views on this and other podcasts, ideas for future ones. We'll talk again soon. Until then, take care.